Sahajam karma kauntya sadosham apina tyajet sarva ramba hidoshena gumena agnir vivavritaha. Translation: every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. I'll read that once more. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, O son of Kunti, even if such work is full of fault. Srila Prabhupada comments in the purport. In conditioned life, all work is contaminated by the material modes of nature. Even if one is a brahmana, he has to perform sacrifices in which animal killing is necessary. Similarly, a kshatriya, however pious he may be, has to fight enemies. He cannot avoid it. Similarly, a merchant, however pious he may be, must sometimes hide his profit to stay in business. Or he may sometimes have to do business black market. These things are necessary. One cannot avoid them. Similarly, even though a man is a shudra serving a bad master, he has to carry out the order of the master, even though it should not be done. Despite these flaws, one should continue to carry out his prescribed duties, for they are born out of his own nature. The fact is that everything and everyone has been placed in this material world by the arrangement of God. Prakrite kriyamana nipunai karmani sarvasa. By the modes of material nature which Krishna is controlling, everything is happening. We are simply passengers. I didn't say that. We are simply passengers on the chariot of the body. Hankara vimudatma karta hamiti manyate. Because we have got a false ego, a hankar, we tend to think this is happening because I did this work and I got this result. But the fact of the matter is we can neither do nor cause to be done anything. That's rather hard realization to accept, because we're proud of our ability to do. But the only thing that we can do is to desire in a particular way, either to serve Krishna or not to serve Krishna, but even beyond that, how to serve Krishna or how not to serve Krishna, we have certain freedoms. But the actual work itself is done by Krishna, and we get the result according to our purva karma, reactions of our past work karma, sangosya sadasad yoni janmasu. We get this body because of our activities in a previous lifetime. And I know that I have always wondered why I was born in a particular family, in a particular country, in a particular place. Because this is one advantage of doing a little traveling and seeing different parts of the world and seeing different cultures and seeing different economic and social situations. It makes you think, why have I been put in my particular situation? Because there's a variety of, you know, basically if you're an American, you've got certain things just by your birth. And of course they're rich and poor Americans, but basically everybody's got certain rights and certain facilities, etc. But you go to Africa, or you go to certain parts of Asia, or wherever, and you see a totally different, so different, it shocks you. Just imagine, instead of your next tour to India, you know, you were taken to Rwanda. You know where Rwanda is? In Africa? That's where the, what do they call them? The Tutsi, or what is it? Hutus. And anyway, these two people, there was genocide and over 1 million people were slaughtered. A lot of them, it's hard to imagine, but a lot of them hardly get subsistence. And you see a lot of fat kids. By fat, I don't mean arms or legs. They have a big belly. It's not because they're full with a lot of food. They've gone to a level of starvation where their body reacts and they have this big belly. And if you tried to feed them, they couldn't take your food. You would have to nurse them back to health. When the United Nations and other, the Red Cross and other groups go there, they first give people in such disaster areas a very easily digestible type of wheat or something. Mr. Branson, so bad. Now, why weren't we born? What's the reason? What did we do not to be born in that situation? You know, you could go there to that place and you could, you know, maybe distribute books, and you could, geez, the people here are really bad. They don't want to buy any books. So they don't have money to buy books. They have barely have money to... And you go there and, you know, you spend a couple of weeks there and, you know, half your luggage is stolen. And boy, these people are, you know, they're really just untrained. But, you know, Daridra Dosho Gunarashi Nashi, when a man is starving, and you want to talk about honesty and integrity and this, he's just trying to live another day. So for him to steal your things is, he's only stealing because you're so miserly you didn't give it to him on the first day, so he stole it on the second day. But it makes you think why we were born in a particular situation. And the reason is because of our previous life's activities, our desire and our karma, our association with the modes of material nature. So this is an arrangement by Krishna. He gives us an opportunity to get free from the material world. Believe me, I've seen so many people who have a culture, they may not be Vaishnavas, but they have some form of religion, and they're not able to follow it. Every country in the world has some form of a famous preacher or spiritual person who came there at a particular time in history and encouraged the people to surrender to God and to go back to the spiritual world. Of course, what Prabhupada has given us is the full pantheon of literatures, the full digest, the whole, you know, complete knowledge. He's given us complete knowledge. But the same instructions are there in the Bible, the Quran, the Torah, the teachings of Amida Buddha, whatever it is. Instructions are there to surrender your life, to live simply. But people won't take it. Even the pauper is proud of his penny. So you get this sense of God is not to be blamed. God is not at fault for our condition. It is our lack, it's really our lack of choosing the right priorities in our lives. We were talking about this today. You need to, early on in your life, and this is a decision that each and every one of us as individuals has to do. We have to take responsibility for our lives and know that whatever happens to us, tattenu kampam susamiksham mana bunjana evatma krikam vipakam. Whatever happens to us, no one else is to blame. I'm not a victim. I am not a victim of someone else's problems, of someone else's work, of someone else's curse or whatever. I'm getting exactly what I deserve. Karmani nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam. And Krishna is kind. He actually gives devotees less than what they deserve. He reduces it so that it's at least tolerable. But we have to learn this lesson ourselves. When we go through life, we have to learn this lesson and try to find out a permanent solution to the ups and downs, to the, you know, the plateaus and the valleys of life, because we all go through sukha dukkha, and we have to become samay, or equanimical. We have to literally transcend our present position. As soon as you get knowledge of your situation, you have to change your whole way of living in the world. It's not an inferior way. It's not like someone was discussing. And one of the reasons Prabhupada was not very enthusiastic initially about having a Gurukula or Gurukulas in America or the West, he thought better India. Because when you tell people about the things which we don't do, the what people call the no's, or, you know, the know this, know that, or the strict regulations that we follow, most people cannot understand it. But it really depends upon your internal commitment. When your yes is so strong, the no's are insignificant. When you really have faith, and you have to keep reinforcing or strengthening your own faith. Of course, you do it by associating with others, but you have to, your own self, you have to program your own mind so that you're always thinking, well, okay, there's no Krishna, but then what is there? What are my answers? Have I got better answers? Have I got something better philosophy? If you have, let us know. You know, we'll also follow. But the fact is that very little chance you're going to find something better. And if you have that faith that there is a supreme deity, controller, intelligent, loving personality, then he is obviously the person to petition to get out of our suffering condition in the material world. And suffering goes from the suffering of people in backward countries to the simple suffering of old age, disease, and death, and rebirth. That's also suffering. Adi daivik, adi bhautik, adi atmik, all the miseries. If we could just learn these things by hearing, even you may not get a PhD in the subject, but at least graduate from high school, you know, at least appreciate to a strong enough degree that you can remain above the water level, that the material world is a place of difficulty and suffering. At least try to learn that much so that you can go through life and follow a path of minimal pravritti and nivritti, a balanced life. Because if you get too far, if you lose that faith and you don't, you know, go too far away from the path, then it's very hard to see the point in all of these no's. But if you have a strong yes, that I want a relationship with Krishna, I know it's theoretically intelligent, and I want to prove my thesis. I want to prove it, and I'm not, the people who are successful in this world are the people who are ready to work for what they believe in. The geniuses, you know, they put in 90% perspiration working for their goals. 10% is, you know, inspiration, and 90% is perspiration. Put in extra time, and they work towards achieving their goals. So try to accept Krishna's supreme position, try to become Krishna's devotee, and when you feel so committed to that, then following a few rules and regulations is not going to be a problem for you. Just like Brahmatirtha Prabhu, you know, he's so committed that he shaved up just to come to my lecture. So this is interesting here. Prabhupada talks about the system of Varnashram and one being situated within that system, and it's true, we have our material natures, and this is Krishna's plan. Guna karma vivagasa. Krishna says, Chaturvarnya mayashristam, I have created this system based upon quality and work. So it's there. You accept it or you don't accept it, but natures are there. That's what dharma means, your essential nature. Something that's intrinsic, that you can't, it's not debatable. Water is wet. Fire is hot. You know, by argument, you're not going to come up with a cold fire that has no light. Fire has heat and light. So we're in one of these divisions of labor, and for our own peace of mind, nasti buddhira yuktasya nachaya pashyabhavam, unless you come to at least the mode of goodness, and the mode of goodness is characterized by peacefulness, satisfaction, you should work towards, we were going to write a book on neurotic, there was some devotee. Who was that?
Neurotic Rishi.
Neurotic Rishi, yeah, there was Narada Rishi, and somehow or other, and it describes him too a little bit. Satyra, we're joking. He came in the room. Neurotic Rishi. But, there's a lot to be neurotic about in these times. Yeah, we can't elect a president. So many neurotic. But there's a lot to be neurotic about, but don't be neurotic. Have fun. Ultimately, the whole thing's Krishna's big joke on all of us. The absolute truth for you. What do you think? Is it correct? It's a big joke. You got a tremendous sense of humor. And they say, those silly little humans. Krishna and Radharani, you know, for their jolly. Look at those guys. You know. But try to be peaceful. And try to act according to your nature. As we said, more is not better. Not necessarily better. Quality is better. Quality will, in all likelihood, bring quantity. We don't have to reject quantity if it comes by Krishna's arrangement. But we should strive for quality in our work and quality in our life. And until we come to that platform, nachayuktasya bhavata, we won't have a steady mind or controlled intelligence. And without that, we won't have peace of mind. And ashantasya kutasutam, with no peace, no happiness. A very nice example is given here. Although fire is pure, still there is smoke. Yet smoke does not make the fire impure. Even though there is smoke in the fire, fire is still considered to be the purest of all elements. If one prefers to give up the work of a kshatriya and take up the occupation of a brahmana, he is not assured that in the occupation of brahmana there are no unpleasant duties. I mean, this is profound. Because we're always thinking, what's the expression, the grass? The other side. You know, if I just go to Sweden, it'll be much better there. Or if I just go back to Yugoslavia, or if I just, you know, go here, go there, or whatever it is. Always. That's the nature of the material world. You can live in the material world and be peaceful, but you've got to be a Kinchana Gochara, or you've got to be Niskinchana. Krishna is a Kinchana Gochara. He's purchased by someone who free from all attachment. It can be Padma Patra Mivambasa, like a lotus leaf. You can be peaceful in the material world, but you have to develop the right consciousness, pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness. You have to see that you're working for Krishna, and it really doesn't matter whether you're in New York or you're in Alachua or you're in Alaska or India, wherever. You're prepared to do your devotional service enthusiastically wherever Krishna chooses you to put. Now, you may have your druthers. It's an expression, famous old expression. Your druthers. So, you may have your druthers, but you're more likely to get your druthers acceded to, or you're more likely to get what you'd rather be doing when Krishna sees that you have this desire, but you're detached. You're prepared to serve him in any event. It's not like, Krishna, if you don't make me the temple president, then I'm gone. I'm history. You can't deal with Krishna in that way. Even at any point, in any situation, Prabhupada, he showed us that he was ready to serve Krishna whatever condition he was in. When he was very poor, living in the Bowery, very wealthy, living in a big palace in Bombay or Vrindavan or Mayapur, who was completely equipoised, completely equanimous. When he was younger and could travel around the world, and when he was older and could hardly move, and finally when he was on his deathbed, speaking into a microphone with the last few jewels of energy he had. Literally cut down to jewels. He was so weak. But didn't change his activity, his mission. So that's the example that we want to follow. We want to be so driven, in a sense, and a driven person is a person who can. There was a man named, and this man named, he wrote a book called, it was Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning. You read that?
Yeah.
Great book. And he wrote a book about Auschwitz, which is a quaint little city in Germany. And anyway, these things are, you know, we've got our own Hitlers here in America. All over the world you find them. It's just, that's the way it is. Material world. Stalin did much more than Hitler. So he, when he was taken, he was a psychologist in Austria, I believe. It wasn't even in Germany. It was Vienna, and he had a good post. He was teaching there. And university or something. Anyway, when he went to Auschwitz, when they took him to Auschwitz, he made three vows. He said, while I'm here, I'm going to use my skills to try and help. Well, so the first thing is I'm going to survive. I'm going to focus my mind on survival. I'm going to use my skills to help people here in the prison camp. Whatever I've learned, I'll try to help. And he said, which was most amazing, he said, I'm going to learn something from this experience. Imagine. So what he found was that those, after he got out, he survived. Some others that he knew also survived in his block. So he wrote a book, the book Man's Search for Meaning. And he explains that those who survived were the ones who had something that was just driving them, that was not completed yet, and they really wanted to see it completed before they died. For someone, it was a project which he was working on, and you know, some formulas or something, but it hadn't been solved, it hadn't been completed, and it was on it. He wanted to see it done. For someone else, it was, you know, he wanted to see his daughter married or his child go to university or something like that. Everybody, you know, had something yet still to be done. And that was driving them. So, we've got something to be done. Something that will act like a rope on the other side of a river. And even though you walk through the fast water and current, but that rope which is tied to the tree on the other side of the river, and you're pulling yourself across, and you cross over the river, because you're focused on the other side. So we're going to succeed in life because we want to know Krishna, we want to love Krishna, we want to serve Krishna, we want to follow Prabhupada, we want to become good people, pure people, gentle people, happy people. We want that. So much so that it's almost like a greediness. You taste it in your mouth. You know, I want that. I want to be a devotee. I like being a devotee. This is my chosen goal in life. And I believe it will bring me happiness. And so that'll carry us across any amount of difficulties. And the fact is that anything else you do, and you know, I said this before, I'll say it again, the benefit of you who did not hear these words of wisdom from Srila Prabhupada. Someone asked Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, what makes you happy? And Prabhupada's answer was, I'm happy when I see you struggling. It wasn't that Prabhupada, you know, was vicious and cruel and liked to see us squirming and struggling. Oh, lust, I can't control. Oh, my mind. Oh, it wasn't like that. But he knew that whatever you do in life, it's going to be a struggle. You struggle for Krishna, that'll get permanent results. If you avoid Krishna consciousness to take up a materialistic way of life, it's not all peaches and cream. You don't walk out of here and immediately someone's there with a contract, $100,000 a year, you know, condo, Jaguar. You know. Is it like that, Ramatirtha? Ramatirtha is both a devotee plus he's by his expertise and intelligence, he has got a good position. material. He works with big people who make it in life. And he sees the struggles and strains and problems that they go through to climb that ladder of success. And invariably, what happens? They get to the top of the ladder and they find the ladder's leaning against the wrong wall. They didn't really want to be where they are, and they've gone through broken family relationships. They've gone through a lot of competition and a lot of exploitation, and they're just as dry and unhappy as when they started. So better to try for something that is at least theoretically a thousand times better. Better to struggle in that direction. Because there's no guarantee that if you do something else, of course, Prabhupada's talking here about if your nature is to be brahminical, but, you know, everybody in the community's sort of, well, let's say Vaishya tendencies, and they all have big houses, and you say you want a big house, and you can't be with a big house unless you do some business, so you give up your study of scripture and your preaching. But there's no guarantee that you're going to be a good Vaishya and get all that material success. So just whatever your nature is, do that and be happy. The whole goal is to be happy, to serve Krishna and to be happy. So this is practical advice for us. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as smoke is, fire is covered by smoke. So even if your work, Prabhupada expressed it quite graphically, that even if someone works for a bad master, what does he say? What's the example? Servant, even though a man is a sudra serving a bad master, he has to carry out the order of the master even though it should not be done. So that's not to say that we don't exercise some discretion in the matter. Obviously, if you can get a master or someone you can work for who doesn't sell cows to slaughterhouses, it's better. Or that's an extreme example. We wouldn't work for any such person in the first place. But still, Prabhupada went into a supermarket of one of our devotees in now devotee in Fiji. And it was a big supermarket, and the whole family were donating a lot of money to ISKCON, and they were devotees. Gujaratis. They didn't eat meat. But they were selling it, and they needed to do that. They figured they needed to do that to make money in their business. So Prabhupada did not tell them, amazingly enough, to sell the supermarket. He told them, just make sure that every penny goes to the service of Krishna. So that's not a license, but it's just that someone was in that situation and Prabhupada did not tell them to immediately make a rash decision and, you know, spoil their whole economic base. Eventually the man advanced in Krishna consciousness and sold the supermarket and got into another business, and, you know, eventually he, now it's a vanaprastha, and his wife preached, and, you know, it's a happy ending. This example of fire and smoke is very appropriate in this connection. When in wintertime one takes a stone from the fire, sometimes smoke disturbs the eyes and other parts of the body, but still one must make use of the fire despite disturbing conditions. Similarly, one should not give up his natural occupation because there are some disturbing elements. Rather, one should be determined to serve the Supreme Lord by his occupational duty in Krishna consciousness. That is the perfectional point. When a particular type of occupation is performed for the satisfaction of the Supreme Lord all the defects in that particular occupation are purified. When the results of work are purified, when connected with devotional service, one becomes perfect in seeing the self within, and that is self-realization. So this chapter is about the perfection of renunciation, and it is advised that one become gradually renounced, because you're going to have to give it all up anyway at a certain stage in your life. The time of death. We all have to take sannyas. We get a big car to travel in called a hearse. And no, it's a fact, though. Better to do it voluntarily, as gradually as you need to, but follow, have some program to be free from attachment to this false temporary world you've got from now until you die. Go. Go, yeah. And you don't know when the clock is going to finish. So every day that you don't, you're, you know, it's like... Anyway, this devotee, the Guru Kulis, Ritattvaja Maharaj, was traveling around in a van with the Guru Kulis, and they came to California. One devotee's father wanted to have him over to his house for a little swimming party and you know, pizza and ice cream, and he showed a few movies. So I went along for the swimming, and to encourage the boys. And they forced me. I took some pizza and ice cream. And I didn't want to watch the movies, but, you know, I didn't want to see him waste his money, so. But he bought these weird videos. I don't know how I thought the kids would be interested. But anyway, one was called The Deer Hunter. I heard some, oh, God, that's a heavy movie. What would kids be interested in? The Deer Hunter. But one scene is about this guy who's in Hanoi. I guess it's Hanoi. In Vietnam. And he was a prisoner of war. And they escaped. They were the bad guys. Of course, the bad guys are always the Americans of the enemy. I mean, the enemies of the Americans. Brain fog again. And so they were, you know, these Vietnamese guys, North Vietnamese, they were having a good time. They got all these prisoners in the river in a kind of cage, and, you know, they call them up one by one on this platform, and you know, they have guards there, and they have this one kind of captain or sergeant, or I think it was an officer. They were betting, and they would have the American guys, and they have a gun, and they have to point it at their head, and there was one bullet in the gun, and click, you know. Okay, you lose, next bet, and then the next American. So this guy got involved in this, and well, what happened was one of them was brave, and so he made a plan with us. Look, we've got to escape from here. So, you know, let's joke around with the captain, get him to say, come on, put 5 bullets in the gun, and we'll take a chance on 5 bullets, you know. So they laughed enough and made the guy laugh, and he said, okay, and they put 5 bullets in the gun. And then, you know, of course, they, all of a sudden, at the right time, blam, 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 you know, they escaped. But one of them was, you know, he was really mentally disturbed by the whole game. He broke down, something snapped inside, like Ted Patrick would say that. Get the snapping technique. You remember that?
Oh, yeah.
They snap the mind. They've got the snapping technique. That was too much. Ted Patrick. He made life so funny. I always wondered, but I kind of thought it would be kind of neat to be attempted to be deprogrammed by them. They're such square people. L7 in square. This one guy ends up in Hanoi, and that's how he makes his living. He takes a lot of heroin. There's a big crowd of people and they're all betting, and he's in there shooting this gun at his head, and you're first introduced to this scene. There's a back alleyway on a street in Hanoi, and a door opens in the alleyway and they throw one body out and close the door. That's what we're doing with ourselves. We're playing this Russian roulette, thinking that I'm going to live more time, live another day. So let me relax. Let me enjoy a little more. And tomorrow I'll get serious about Krishna consciousness. Just, as we say in New York, you just never you just never know. You really don't. And, there's about 50, 60 people, no, maybe more in this room right now. How many we got? Huh? 20? Okay, 50. So there's 50 people here. Wouldn't want someone to think that they're not a people, so make it more. There's 40 people and 10 animals. 50 people here in the room. And I'll bet you that most of us like Krishna consciousness to varying degrees. We like chanting. We like prasadam. But we exemplify Yamaraja's statement, the most amazing thing. I don't think that any of us really think that we're going to die tomorrow or the next day. Or the next day. And I don't think you will either. It'll be a while. But still, the best way to think is I could die tomorrow, so let me be Krishna conscious today. Yes?
You were saying that we should try to be happy and try to push the consciousness. But when I hear that, I kind of think of happiness as a state of mind. Like, it's almost like you don't really have a choice to be happy. It just seems that it's something that comes up from the heart.
I agree with you, it is a state of mind, but you can precipitate or catalyze that state of mind. did Prabhupada say? Chant Hare Krishna, have no worries, be happy. He gave three instructions. So, it takes a little effort to be happy. But once you get in the slipstream, the jet stream of happiness, it drags you right in, you know. It's like love. It takes work to develop a relationship with someone. It's a state of mind, but it's not just a noun, it's a verb. There's action involved. You have to try. You have to create opportunities for experiences or relationships to deepen. You have to plan them. You have to think about it. You don't just have a relationship with your being. You know, I'm radiating love. Can't you feel it? I'm serious. Some people think like that. And no. Love is much deeper than that. Love means engaging all your senses in planning your relationship. What do you think the gopis are doing? They're planning to meet Krishna. They're constantly planning how to meet Krishna, how to render any little service. They're just thinking, if this happens, if I see that Krishna needs a handkerchief, I'll be there. You know, or Krishna needs to have his hair decorated, or he doesn't need anything, but if there's an opportunity for me to do it, if I see that someone's not doing it, or probably it's actually planned much more. Radharani, of course, her assistants, they plan much better than that. But the point is that they look for every opportunity and they think about it. So, in the same way, happiness. No matter, the best of optimists is going to have the occasional bad day. Can't help it. But try to make the day, try to have a detached attitude towards life where the only thing that really matters is that you're engaged in the association of devotees in serving Krishna. And be so grateful for that, that it just makes you happy. How to cultivate that happiness, how to work for happiness. Of course, there's chanting 16 rounds. Of course, there's reading Srimad Bhagavatam. And you could just take it. I mean, people do take it like that. They say, well, I know someone, or I chant. I read, but I'm just not happy. I'm just depressed. I'm unhappy. But I really wonder if we're reading the same books. Because when I read Bhagavad Gita, every time I pick it up, it's full of the very stuff I want. There's nobody who gives me answers like this. There's nobody who gives me the solution to all my life's problems. It's a joy. There's not enough time in a day to hear Prabhupada speak. I enjoy that now. Reading is a little hard for me, but hearing tapes, I hear 5 or 6 tapes a day.
it's just it's a thrill to listen to him preach. So I would say there's a qualification. Krishna consciousness is not for everyone. On a certain level, it's not for everyone. It's only for people who want to get out of the material world. If you want to stay here, then Krishna will fulfill that desire. And you can adopt Krishna consciousness as your official religion on your employment form. Right? Krishna consciousness or Hari Bol, whatever you like. But you're probably not going to be much better off than if you put Christianity or any other thing. Because you're not really interested in going back to Godhead anyway. But if you are interested, then this is thrilling. If we didn't have to eat and sleep and mate and defend a lot of our time, we could just reduce those things a little more and get a little more. If we didn't have to manage an institution and preach, which is also happiness in its own way, helping someone to be introduced to Prabhupada, that's really nice. That's sweet, because those people, when you introduce someone to Krishna, you're practically making them your disciple. You become a Vartma Pradarshak Guru. And I know life members I've made. There was one man in Los Angeles, and he's a very wealthy man, has a big accounting firm. I knew him in Bombay. He was just a small timer, had a little business. And I went and made him a life member, and I preached at his house, took prasadam with him and his wife, and spent a little time with them. And I gave him, as he became a life member, I said, look, I want you to become a life member. And I want you to read this book. So eventually he did end up reading it. And he eventually went to Los Angeles, became very successful, and he eventually got attached to Radha Rukmini Dwarkadish and became one of their best congregational members and, one of Nirantara's best workers. How many know Nirantara? He's a wonderful devotee, Nirantara. Really wonderful. He's the best bhakti baseball player I ever met. He knows Krishna both backwards and forwards. But anyway, and he plays a mean guitar also, if you're from the 60s. And he's initiated now by Bhaktacharya Swami, but all the time, for years and years and years, he's been asking about me, calling, when is Maharaj coming? He tells everybody, Maharaj made me a life member, I owe everything to him. He's not my disciple. All his family members, they're all in the shoot of the Bhaktacharya Maharaj. But he remembers that I gave him Bhagavad Gita. It changed his life. So that's really gratifying to me. I feel I've done something for someone. So that makes me happy that I could do something worthwhile in life. I'll tell you, the biggest charity now in America, it's certainly one of them. I can't remember the name of it. But it's basically for helping yuppies to do charity. They don't have time. They're working all day, all night. But they've got 45 minutes or an hour at lunch. So this charity finds different organizations where they can donate that hour to going to a blind home or deaf school or something, giving out prasadam or something, giving out something. And they did a study on salaries, industry, you know, again, Americans, they always like to do studies that like the statistics. So they did a study on what motivates a person to be loyal to a company and to be satisfied in their position. And you'd be surprised, salary was not the number one criteria. The number one criteria was being able to work in a creative way in one's job, having a little freedom to be creative. And number two was doing something to benefit society. I want to feel that my work or my life makes a difference to someone or something in the world. So it is a source of happiness. And preach and feel good about it and don't hold back, you know. Laugh. That's the way to be. Nothing like laughter. I mean, Brahmatirtha and Vridayananda Maharaj, they're always joking, right? Yeah, and it's great, isn't it? You can't pass through life in such a dry way. Laugh. Prabhupada laughed a lot. And when he laughed, his smile was oceanic. Who said that?
Sally
Agarwal. Sally Agarwal. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. She said the Swami had such a big smile. I think that lady's going back to God. That interview that she gave about Prabhupada was, so sweet. And, you know who Sally Agarwal is? Huh? She was the wife of Mr. Agarwal. Who was the son of his father, Mr. Agarwal. Who was the man who first sent Prabhupada to America. So Prabhupada stayed at her house for about a month. A couple of weeks, something like that. Huh? Butler, Pennsylvania. So she, when they interviewed her for the World of Hare Krishna movie, or maybe Was Your Ever Well Wisher, Your Ever Well Wisher, she told the story about Prabhupada, that he was a wonderful man, and that he was always happy, and he would always smile and play with Bridge, their little son, was named Bridge, and it's a picture of him, you know, holding the boy's hands like this and helping. And then she tells when Bridge first started to walk, the Swami was there and he was so delighted. And when he would smile, it was the most wonderful smile. His smile was oceanic, she said. He would smile from ear to ear. And he was the most wonderful man that I ever met in my life. He said that was so beautiful. But Prabhupada told jokes, Bengali jokes. He told many different kinds of jokes, but mostly they were educational or instructional or whatever. But sometimes he would tell jokes that were totally out of place. Just him doing it was kind of like a joke. Prabhupada, is it you? But, laugh. Nothing to be negative about in this world to be happy. Wonderful philosophy. We have wonderful deities. We have wonderful prasadam. Devotees are just the best people. Best people. All devotees. Junior devotees. Senior devotees. Old devotees. Young devotees. There's differences. There's fights. There's this and that. That's alright. But at the end of the day, 90% of devotees don't hold grudges. Devotees don't have friends and enemies. most of the time.
Not even.
Huh? Well, I think I'm optimistic. I think so. I think so. Only you. Anyway, I'm a, like I said, I'm a devotee, but don't hurt my faith.
One thing I don't understand about this movement is that there's so many devotees, you know, they go to different universities and colleges, and they think that they just have to go. I don't believe that that's a problem. I believe that a university and a college is like a piece of garden. Once you just go to the university,
well, I'm glad you prefaced it by I believe. Because it's your belief. I didn't hear you once quote from the Srila Prabhupada. And I believe that unless you quote from the Srila Prabhupada, you're talking off the top of your toque. This is called a toque. Okay. I don't believe that the majority of devotees should be bothered with university. But for preaching purposes, I mean, I'm real happy that Sadaputta has a PhD from Binghamton. He wouldn't get into any of the conferences that he gets into and deliver, you know, knock of dead papers and concepts. I mean, he's challenging the whole Western idea of life and existence and creation, etc. And I don't believe Rasaraj could do anything. Hridayananda Maharaj or Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I mean, these people are not ordinary. Hridayananda Maharaj was the fastest PhD in the history of Harvard University in Sanskrit. Tamal Krishna had the his professor at Southern Baptist University, a Methodist, Southern Methodist, same thing, come to his birthday and glorify him. The best student I ever had in my whole career. Fanned him with a peacock fan. The first time he ever picked up a peacock fan. So, this helps us. You know, there's a, if we don't write books on bhakti, there are non-devotees, non-devotees who will write books on bhakti and teach it to the people, and they don't know a thing about bhakti because they don't practice bhakti. They're just theorists. But now we have our own group of scholars who have all the academic qualifications, and they're still bhaktis, and they can write those books according to Prabhupada, and they'll be taught in the universities as course material. But I agree with you, there's not much there. And I dropped out of college in the first year because I pretty much agreed with you. But I'm glad other people, so I'm glad somebody's gone on to do it. We need a cadre of people who can stand up and talk the language of scientists and preach to the scientists, stand up and talk the language of psychologists. Now, who has to do that? Well, that should be decided by an appropriate body, or and all of those people took permission to do it. They didn't just do it on their own whimsy. They took permission from their godbrothers and from the GPC. So I believe that your belief is wrong. Okay?
Well, if
What do you have to say about that?
All that my point is that I would like to see that devotees engage in more service and not worry.
How
about
old are you? How old are you?
20.
They've been engaged in service more years when you were still 25 years coming. They were engaged in devotional service. They started the Krishna consciousness movement, and for a long time they were the pillars of the Sankirtan movement, the membership movement, the preaching movement. And Prabhupada gave them a lot of freedom, or a lot of responsibility, a lot of freedom in their responsibility to see how Krishna consciousness should be preached according to time and place and circumstance. We are not frozen in time in one person's conception. How to preach the mission of bhakti is not just a little band of cultists anymore. It's an internationally accepted institution. We have a center at Oxford University. You don't know what that means because you'll probably never see Oxford in your life. And I don't even know if you've heard it or seen the pictures of it. But it's one of the most prestigious universities, like Harvard. But even, maybe even more so than Harvard. Oxford is more prestigious. And Cambridge also. We have a center in Cambridge. And scholars go there and they hear from our scholars about Krishna consciousness. And these are the movers and shakers in today's world because they get consulted by politicians, by industrialists, etc. What is this Hare Krishna movement? They get asked. Because they're the authorities. Yeah.
This verse is clear that there is no duties for shooters, workers, just serving. But there are also duties for the other owners.
Yeah, well, he's talking, they should study scripture. But I'm saying time and place and circumstance, we need to see what is important. And
I was just saying that we see people blending all the varnas together.
Where do these devotees get their authority to do what they're doing? Well, they are very intelligent, rational, committed people who have a lot of experience in spreading Krishna consciousness. And it is the opinion of the GBC body, many, not all the members, there are people who would agree with me, but the majority opinion is that these devotees are rightly situated in doing what they're doing. Are there any other questions? Yes? Oh. Was the mother Bhakti, mother of Bhakti, mother Bhakti. Shame. Hare Krishna women are not just, you know, suppressed and oppressed and, you know, in the kitchen, pregnant. And
what?
Depressed. But they're good. Now, what did you do for the first 20 years of your devotional life? And what were the, what are they doing now? What did you do for the first 20 years of your devotional life, and what are they doing now?
I raised two sons. I raised a whole bunch of Gurukul. And but as far as my two sons, is that what you
have? Yeah.
I have a 27-year-old who is a very
watch out.
And a number two son is 24 years old, third year law student.
So in other words, you have worked above cover for many years, and now you're not exactly an undercover student of Hare Krishna, but you're doing something that you've always wanted to do for Krishna.
Well, now I'm going to start a marriage and mental health counseling.
Good.
And I get confirmation every day.
Great. Yeah. We're doing okay. I think we're doing okay. Rabindra Sroop, another one of those crazy Hare Krishnas, got his PhD, probably one of the more brilliant history of religion majors at Pennsylvania University. He studied religious history, and he thinks that we're doing quite well in comparison to other religions historically in terms of our development and our dealing with problems that always come up and dealing with our, you know, not having much of a wide support base or financial base. We're doing pretty good. All right. Thank you.
I was thinking about is it possible that we have some attrition? That attrition, I don't think.
Attrition? Nutrition?
Intuition.
Intuition, okay.
That Krishna is not going to make me die in a few days. Because I need
progress. I need
progress
in some, and you think that dying will help you to progress in Krishna consciousness?
He says, is it possible for us to have the intuition that Krishna is not going to let us die right
now? Oh, not going to let us die.
Because we need to make a little more progress
right now. I personally, I discussed this today with some devotees. I was pretty surprised, actually. I thought all devotees were more or less free from the fear of death. I don't have fear of death. But I do have one fear, that I will die, and I know I'm not ready. But I'm just begging for mercy. I'll be a mercy case if I have to die now. But you're right, yeah, that's true. A devotee, in that way, a devotee will have to live eternally, because a devotee never feels like he's made enough investment. Yeah, I mean, yep, okay, I'm ready, Krishna. You know, let it happen.
I was just reading from that the prophet Yogi is choosing.
I Krishna is very kind. Suridam Sarva Bhutanam. He's our best friend. And he is bringing us back to him. Whether we want to go or not, we're already too much entangled. And we can object and struggle another lifetime or two at the very most, but from many different viewpoints, I think a lot of devotees, if they just somehow try to chant the minimum amount of rounds and try as best they can to do a little devotional service and try to be a friendly devotee helping others, even if they don't achieve it, but they try to do it, that Krishna will pick them up and, you know, maybe like a jami will get 40 years or something, whatever, in Hardwar. But, you know, real quick, back to home. One thing that would help, and that is when you're in a temple, try to sit in such a way that you don't have your back to the deities or your back to Prabhupada, either way. It's just something that is not often told to devotees, but it is kind of important. We were always taught that way. It was always funny, you know. It was really always funny because I was a young brahmachari and the women were always on the left and the men were always on the right. So either we would be dancing, you know, facing each other, or we'd be sitting down looking at each other. And, you know, we were supposed to, you know, just be detached and you know, think of your service and listen to the lecture. I always thought it kind of interesting how we were supposed to do this, but that's the etiquette anyway. You don't sit with your back to the deities in these kind. Some temples you see where the asana will be over there, so then you can sit with your back that way. And, but this way is not true. Grantharaj, Bhagavad Gita.